It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Communication is the cornerstone for clarity, understanding, and leadership on the job. Unfortunately, changes in technology, bad habits, and personalities can ruin presentations, company memos, and speeches. Here with tips for better communication in the workplace is career coach Sasha King. Welcome back, Sasha.
Thank you, Paul.
Many people have quirks that show up in presentations of daily communication. What are some common idiosyncrasies to monitor and change in order to communicate more effectively?
One of the things I usually discuss with sometimes my younger clients and some of my female clients is the tendency to do up talking. This is when you bring up a topic and instead of taking a firm stand, you do a rising intonation of your voice. And sometimes we also call it as like the beginning of the Valley Girl speech pattern, okay? So one of the reasons why that's really popular sometimes is when you have to bring up a difficult subject, it's better to try to make levity of it, but what instead it does is it takes away from some of the strength of the argument that you're trying to make. Another thing, a nervous tick that many people show is the filler speech, saying things like, you know, or like. One of the things that we train people to do in things like Toastmasters and public speaking classes is we will literally count the number of fillers that we use in a speech so that you're more aware of that habit. Now, one of the things I usually talk to about with people who especially that they have a lot of education is what I like to call superiority syndrome. This is when you cut people off using no, but actually, or my personal favorite, let me explain why that won't work. Now, there's definitely times where you have to do these things, but many times if you're in a brainstorming session, what do you think of the person that's constantly doing that? You don't personally have a very high opinion of them, and not only that, you get the reputation of being a know-it-all.
It gets kind of annoying.
It's really annoying. It's very annoying. So it causes some problems there. So one of the things I usually encourage people to do is if you do know that there might be a problem that it's going in a different direction, highlight where you think that the conversation is going. Check with that person like, Steve, are you talking about your experience with social media? So you're checking with that person and then, I'm really ready to discuss another subject. So you can gently guide along the conversation without using what I like to refer to as superior language, which will then engender a better relationship with the other person you're speaking to. Another thing that I usually tell people to avoid and something I am sometimes guilty of is what I like to call speed racer. Just like the television show, you're really running through your speech because you have a lot of things to say.
You're driving at Mach 5 speed.
Oh, Mach 5 speed. I've been talking since I was 5, so this is something I even have to watch myself as a natural tendency. The easiest way to deal with that speed racer tendency is to really sit and reflect. One thing talkative people have to consider is, you know what, our minds may move a mile a minute and we're very voluble, we're very comfortable speaking a lot, but sometimes taking a brief, pregnant pause and then speaking will take care of some of that problem and make sure that the person on the other side really understands what you're saying. Finally, I always tell people to be aware of between the differences between generations of communication styles. So someone who might be a little bit older, who's either a boomer or the greatest generation, they might want a phone conversation or want to talk with you face to face. However, if you're dealing with someone who's a Gen Xer, they want maybe an email with attachment and information. But however, the best way to get a hold maybe of a millennial is texting them through a cell phone or using social media platforms as a form of communication. So it's not just quirks you have to worry about, it's generational quirks. How you communicate with someone within your own cohort and age is going to be different than what you're going to do with someone who's older or younger than you.
Social media has changed the way companies communicate with employees and clients. While it's a useful tool, mistakes on social media, as we all well know, can have lasting repercussions for individuals and companies. So what tips do you recommend, Sasha, for social media platforms?
Always read your company's policy on social media. Many times you have to sign a contract with companies explaining what they expect out of you for social media use when you're using the company platforms, but also what they expect out of you when you're even using your own personal media accounts. So one thing I always want to start people thinking about is what are positive things to share on social media? Are there success stories on your job and things that you were able to get done with clients? Do you have professional accomplishments? Do you have you found an article or a podcast you find that's related to your industry that's interesting? So the more you share positive content, the more you really are going to get a better reputation online socially for what you can do. You also want to see if there's certain types of company information that is positive you can share. The reason why I always say check with people is if you're in an industry where you have to have maybe different kinds of names or something like, say, human services or social services, you certainly cannot share a certain amount of restricted information. But a general discussion of where people are finding successes might be permissible. If you're having a bad day, call someone. Don't put it on social media. You don't want to be, you know, the messenger of dour and doom all the time. The other thing I always encourage people to do is what I like to say, avoid the big four. The big four would be posts about race and ethnicity, religion, politics, sexual orientation, and gender. You don't want to use this. These formats or take huge stands on these issues sometimes because people have lost scholarships. People lose jobs over these issues. It's so funny. I teach social media as part of my job, and I think I've tracked in the past 3 months, 25 people have lost their jobs over the subject.
You really have to tell people this?
Common sense isn't common. I always tell people, please do an audit. And what do I mean by audit? At the end of each year, go through your social media accounts and see if you've posted anything that might be construed as being controversial. Then go ahead and delete it. Now, one thing you should know this, once you have posted something online, you can't completely get rid of it. That's the reason why certain celebrities have had problems. Case in point, I can think of one comedian that posted some tweets many years ago that he still had up in his personal media profile, and some of it they were able to go through the Internet Wayback Machine and find things that he had deleted. So these are things that are very important. It's the smartest thing in the world to do is not post it at all. Now, if you end up in a situation where you posted something controversial that was not the smartest thing to do at a website that you have no control over, you do have the option of contacting the person that runs the site and beg them to get rid of it. You can also go through a process with Google and get rid of it in a Google cache. However, you will not always have that option. And for those people, I usually tell them, create your own social media platform like a blog or a website. Post positive content, whether it's podcasts, whether it's articles. So what you're doing is if someone's doing a Google search on you before they meet you, all of that negative information moves back several pages.
Email is also an area where people can run into trouble. What tips do you have for email etiquette?
Always think about what is the purpose of this email. And once you've figured out the purpose of email, break it down by paragraphs, but also understand with business writing, you have an additional option. You can highlight your main points in bullets and always end with a signature. One thing I have to counsel my younger clients on is business emails are not personal emails, so you don't want emojis and text abbreviations to appear in your email messages. And I have been frightened sometimes by some of the messages that even I've received, and I don't even understand what half of what they're saying because it's not in English. It's in, you know, little text speak here. Think before you put something in writing. What many people don't realize is the things that you send out in terms of your business life and even to a degree in your personal life on an email can be legally binding. So if you're having a big flare-up with someone, you might want to work on that one-on-one in person and not put in an email. And speaking of email etiquette, that's a general good idea to do, is one of the things that I see in a lot of people's professional emails is they lack an email signature. An email signature is something you can set up with most websites, and you want to include your name, your job title, or if you're in between jobs, you can also include your industry type of job you're looking for. Your company address, your website, your own website or company's website, email, telephone number, and if you have social media profiles like LinkedIn, you can actually put them as a link at the bottom, or you can use a program that I like to use called YStamp, which will actually show little icons for those social media websites that someone can click on and see your profiles. Another thing that I want people to get much more in the habit of doing is please send a vacation or out of office response letting people know that you're not going to be around. It's just good etiquette because we all understand that people take breaks, but sometimes your clients need to know where you are and whether or not you can service their needs immediately.
It's Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're talking with career coach Sasha King. She's sharing tips about better habits for use of technology, social media, and public speaking. And while we're on the subject of public speaking, it's not the favorite task of some, especially if they have to speak in front of the bosses. So what should employees do to plan a stellar presentation, Sasha?
What do you want people to take away from it and learn? What also do you want people to think about and do as a result of what you're presenting? Now, once you have that in mind, you have to think about the fact you're presenting pretty much to four different types of people. The first type of people would be rational thinkers. They would want facts and figures. So you want to make sure you reference studies and give facts and have looked at that information because they're really not going to buy into your idea or presentation without it. Visionary thinkers want you to appeal to their feelings and what they could possibly do. So make sure you use some of that language when you're doing a presentation. Authority figures want to know what you will use from an organization or what you have and what you whether respect the system or not. So if you're someone who's going to have to make changes, please do highlight what is working and what is good about the system because you don't want to upset that demographic. Finally, independent thinkers want to know alternative ways of doing things. So whenever I do professional presentations, I literally build a certain amount of information to meet the needs of all four groups so that I can get more consensus when I present an idea. Because other than that, if anything I've learned over the years doing presentations is if I don't meet all those demographic needs, I might have a little bit of a fight at the end of it. Another thing that I always encourage people is to get visual and audio. Make sure you add images that are compelling, but also don't make that mistake that I see sometimes students make, which is put all your information in slides with lots of long words. You really should not have more than 3 to 4 bullets on a PowerPoint slide, and don't be afraid to integrate audio clips or podcasts to engage your audience. Sometimes that'll get people to wake up, especially if you're doing a very long presentation. Personalizing your presentation by mentioning a failure that you had on that topic, especially initially and how you grew and learned from it, generates a higher buy-in rate for what you're teaching. And the reason why is they want to have a presentation with an expert. They want an expert who's learned and grown from their experience. So if they're making mistakes and you made mistakes and you can overcome that, they have a better chance of believing that they can do that too. And finally, for people who struggle with it, one of the things I usually tell them to do is, okay, extroverts or people who are very comfortable doing presentations maybe can wait to the last minute to do one. However, people who may be a little more socially awkward or shy may take more time and energy to get that done. So I will always tell them to really spend an extra, you know, couple of days, if possible, optimally, to prepare your presentation. But also I tell them to do power poses. If you've ever watched the TED Talks by Amy Cuddy, that actually help you deal with stressful, evaluative situations. So doing power poses before you present in front of other people calms them down a little bit and helps them do a more effective presentation.
And last but not least, while we have a number of ways to communicate, the good old telephone hasn't been replaced entirely yet. So what common errors occur with phone communication? What advice do you have for people to smooth out those one-on-one conversations, either with a cell phone or your landline on your desk?
The number one issue that I find with phone communication is the voicemail problem. I actually was making phone calls earlier today, and this happened to me 5 different times. Oh, this is what I frequently refer to as the cryptic computer voicemail message. So someone doesn't personalize their voicemail message. You just get the number. And then you half wonder whether you're really getting in contact with the right person. Now, I always tell people the truth is when you're looking for a job and that's the case, many times a human resources professional will not call you back because there's so many volumes of people they're calling for a phone screen, they don't want to take the chance on you. So you really, really, really want to make sure you do a personal message. And while you're doing that personal message, I want to see the end of the cutesy family message. While it may seem endearing and cute to you, professionally it doesn't sound the best message. So something is an alternative would be, hello, my name is Sasha King. I cannot answer the phone right now, but please leave your name, number, and the reason for this call, and I will get back to you as soon as possible. You want to keep things professional because, like I said, you never know who is going to call your home or who is going to call your voicemail. And while you're on that subject, the another issue that people have is the issue with ringtones. This is something I see in a lot of my younger clients. I had a client that I worked with very hard to get a job at one of the local retailers. Now, this person had a passion for certain types of music that have very suggestive lyrics. Well, this person decided to keep, against his better judgment, a suggestive lyric ringtone. Now, the manager for this retail establishment called this client, and when they heard the ringtone, when they finally got a hold of this person, decided not to hire this person, rescinded the job offer because they didn't want to be associated with that. So when you're a professional, when you're looking for work, you might want to clean these things up. Finally, another thing with phone communication is that you want to be careful when you answer the phone. One of the things I always tell people to do, and not just for their own professional careers, but even with their children, teach them the habit of answering the phone professionally. So, hello, this is my name. This is, you know, may I ask who you'd like to speak to? These are things and skills that sometimes people are lacking. And before you think that's crazy, I had a client that had a teenage son who didn't necessarily embody these habits. And there was a recruiter for a high-end job that was really interested in her. But their son was so unprofessional when they answered the phone that a job offer was rescinded. So yes, these things do matter.
Our career coach, Sasha King, with some very good advice about better communication. As always, Sasha, great thanks.
Oh, thank you, Paul.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA.